I really can't take credit for the work I'm going to present to you today. There are a lot of people who have been engaged in this activity. We're with the Southeast Climate Consortium. What I've done is to put up the names of the leaders from each of our six institutions, Jim Jones, Jim O'Brien, Gert Hogenboom, Jim Novak, David Letson, John Christie. And I made a reference to the SCCC team, which includes about 50 people. We are a multidisciplinary, multi-institutional group. The six member universities come from three states in the Southeast. The only one, the one at the bottom, University of Alabama Huntsville, is kind of an outlier because they do not have a powerhouse football team. What I'm going to present is a little different from what I put into my abstract. I'm sure you've been in a situation where you write an abstract and then things change and you find out that maybe there's something that's a little more important to talk about. So I'm going to be shifting from looking at managing risks associated with climate variability, which has been our emphasis in the SECC, and talk a little bit about managing risks associated with climate change. So we're broadening that scope. So I'll talk about why we did that and give some information on the historic observations, what we're looking at into the future, and then what are some of the implications for agriculture. So why do we do this? I think actually it's not the IPCC that started the ball rolling here. I think it was the Stern Review. We as scientists pay attention to the IPCC, but politicians paid attention to the Stern Review, which was an economic assessment of the potential economic impacts of climate change. I'm not going to go through the details here. Of course, you've gotten a summary of the IPCC fourth assessment where we see climate actually changing. But the thing that's really hit us in the Southeast, we have a strong element in the Southeast Climate Consortium looking at evaluation and assessment. How do we evaluate our products? What are the farmers saying about them? The extension agents, what do they think? And in discussions with farmers, one of the things that farmers are starting to ask about is climate change. Not all, but they're asking about climate change. And we feel that it's important and it's essential for us to start providing answers, not just farmers. We get questions from cities and counties and all kinds of people asking us about climate change, what's going to happen and what it means. And I think we have two challenges here. The first is probably the hardest for us, and there is that there's a broad gap that still exists between people who want to act right now, and we need to act right now, and then there's another group, a significant group, that says that global warming is still a myth. I mean, the Commissioner of Agriculture in the state of Florida made a presentation just 2 weeks ago to a group of climate scientists. He got up there and said, I want you to know that I think this global warming story is just a load of bunk. I paraphrase a little bit. He's not the only one who feels that way. I know a lot of climate scientists who feel that way. But the key is they all recognize that climates do change and that climate variability is very important. And I think what we need to do is find a way of bridging those two camps and provide information, the best information that we can without trying to take sides, that people can use as a solid basis for making their decisions. At a workshop a couple of weeks ago in Maryland, there was a comment that said people are making decisions based on emotion rather than on data. And I think our challenge is to provide the data that people can use to make their decisions. You've already seen this. But there is something I want to point out here that it's just a major question for me is what's happening here? Look at this variability. You see, it's not just this is a fairly consistent trend, but there are a lot of blips in this temperature trend. Right around World War II, right after World War II, we see a cooling trend. If you look carefully, you can see the effects of Mount Pinatubo. There are a lot of things besides greenhouse gases that are involved in this system, which becomes especially evident if you look at the results from the Vostok Ice Core. I hope most of you have seen these before. This goes back 400,000 years. So it's a long historical record, and we see major fluctuations of CO2 and temperature. And then we look into the future, and Cynthia showed this one also, but one of the things that they all show a rise in temperature, but there's a widely divergent estimate of how much we're going to rise. When we look backward, and that's actually where we're looking right now in the Southeast Climate Consortium, we're looking at the historical data. Unfortunately, there are a lot of gaps, there are discontinuities, there are problems with these. We don't have that many stations that have a long historical record. So one of the challenges is to get a good picture of what's happened previously. And we're looking at a lot of ways to get that information. General circulation models, what we use to try to forecast, have relatively poor resolution. Florida, as a peninsula, doesn't show up in many of them, which is unfortunate for Florida, I guess. But the key is, and I think what's important, is we need to think about local and regional climate information needs, and we need to start providing that kind of information. So our climatologists have been trying to step in here, and they looked at some data from Fort Myers, which is located in a downtown, mostly an urban area, which has just had tremendous urban sprawl over the last 40 years, and almost a tenfold increase in population over the last 40 years. And if we look at this now, that the lines are just linear regressions. But what I think is interesting is we see these same sorts of patterns, approximately the same times as you see the blips in the global pattern. This is the maximum temperature, daily maximum. We also have the daily minimum temperature. They both go up. This NCDC, that's the National Climate Data Center. That's what they call normal. That's their 30-year normal period. Okay. The temperatures are rising in Fort Myers, there's no doubt about it. If we look at Arcadia, Florida, which is a small town, rural, the station is located near the city limits, very little growth in this town, just still has a population of about 10,000. We put a linear regression through this one and it's going down, which is just phenomenal. A very important thing here. We see temperature, both the daily maximum and the daily minimum temperatures on average are going down. Now, we see a lot of scatter in these, a lot of variability. And I'm only going to show two. There are a lot of others. You have to trust me so far that these are representative. That's what we tried to pick out. What we're trying to do is put together a tool where somebody can go in there and click on their county and find out what the historical trend is for their county. So hopefully that'll be up before the end of next year. But what the main thing is that these data tell us that there's a strong impact of land use. If rural temperatures have actually decreased over the last century, we're looking at kind of this combined effect with global impact effects on agriculture. One of the agricultural impacts on local climates in Florida, anyway, is that it seems to have cooled the temperatures. But it's not a regional basis, it's local, because if you look at the cities, we see a temperature increase. Sea level has definitely risen in the last century. These are Key West and Pensacola. Overall, about 8.5 inches in the last century. That's about 2.1 millimeters per year. We've already seen the sea level rise. And Cynthia asked the question earlier, if we've already seen climate change, what have the impacts been? Well, that's the same question I asked about these data here. What have the impacts been about this 8.5 inch of sea level rise? And the answer that I got was that there has been so much human influence on the coastal areas due to development, erosion coming into the estuaries, and other things, that overwhelms the impacts of this 8.5 inch sea level rise that has been observed. Hurricanes are a major concern in Florida, as they are for most of the Gulf area. One of there are a couple of trends that people are talking about. There's a lot of uncertainty here also, but it's very clear that the numbers of hurricanes have not changed much. The numbers of landfalling hurricanes have been more or less constant over the period of record. What has changed? The yellow bars are the Category 1 and 2. We've had a reduction in numbers of the weaker hurricanes. The Category 3 and 4 have increased. Category 5s have only been reported in the last 2 decades or so, so they don't really appear on this graph. But there has been an increase in the numbers of stronger hurricanes. Looking into the future is very hard, partly because we don't have good data yet. This is our challenge. As Cynthia pointed out, there's a lot of variation in the projections for the future, with the polar regions experiencing more warming than the lower latitudes. One of the things that we'll be looking at, in Florida we're looking at maybe a half degree, 1 degree temperature rise. We're not sure. It'll depend on the land use, we feel. We do expect precipitation to increase, and we have seen an increase in precipitation over the last century, so we expect that to continue. To summarize, we expect temperatures to increase in urban areas, but possibly a decrease in rural areas. We expect higher total rainfall, and we expect more extreme events, which means stronger hurricanes. In fact, if surface temperatures continue to increase, we might expect fewer total numbers of hurricanes because we have a permanent El Nino kind of phenomenon, but those hurricanes that we do get should be stronger. And droughts and floods are going to be continuing to be more frequent, and land use is important. So the challenge is, we've been trying to figure out what to say to farmers. What do we say to our producers? And one of the first things we tell them is to stay informed, because there are lots of sources of information. We have forecasts that are going out for seasonal information, what's the coming season. Some of that is on a product that we produce at the SECC called Ag Climate, agclimate.org. Farmers can go to that and get an idea of what's coming up in the near term. We've been trying to answer the question of what do we do for adaptation, and we're looking at possibly changing planting dates. In fact, some farmers have already changed planting dates, as Cynthia pointed out. In the southeast, actually, they're planting a little bit later because the temperatures have cooled slightly, and they can't plant as early as they used to plant. Changes of variety and variety selection, that's a hard one because as the plant breeders develop new varieties, that gets into the system pretty much automatically. Infrastructure and strategy. There's a very strong effort to increase irrigation availability in the southeast, and to both to limit mitigate drought and heat injury. A lot of people don't believe that there's such a thing as drought in the southeast. The people in the west don't pay attention, but anybody in the southeast today knows that we're in one of the worst droughts of record. Centered right around Atlanta, and we're starting to have water wars again, and it's going to be a very interesting time over the next couple of years. For instance, we're expecting a La Nina winter, which means that we're expecting dry weather to continue at least through spring. So it's going to get worse before it gets better. Crop insurance, diversification of land holdings, and an important one for farmers, whether or not they believe in climate change, they need to understand that the market exists, or it's going to be existing very soon. I'm not sure how many of you are aware that there's a bill in the Senate right now for a cap and trade system for setting up a carbon market in the U.S. Our producers need to be aware and be part of that. Mitigation, energy efficiency, no-till is going to be important also for the carbon sequestration as well as energy efficiency. We have a list of things that we're telling growers. There's another message that I think is important for all of us to keep in mind and keep in front of everybody. One of the problems is people. We have avoided, as a scientific community, the discussion of human population. We need to bring that into the mix somehow. Just have to. And the last thing, I think my time is up. I'd like to give an advertisement. I'm not sure whether I've answered more questions or asked more questions, but we have a conference that's going to be trying to figure out how we answer these questions coming up in June of next year. It's aimed at how do we get local and regional climate information and apply it to agriculture and natural resources. If you're interested, I have brochures. And I'm going to set them right on the table over here.